Today on Growing Through Grace.
You get on a boat with guys and they make their living at it. Now they're going, we're going to die. I think you give up home pretty quickly as well. We're going to die. All except for Paul. He was sure he was going to get to Rome. Why? Because the Lord had said you're going to get to Rome.
Listening to Growing Through Grace with Pastor Jack Abelin of Morningstar Christian Chapel in Whittier, California. It's good to be with you again, and we're going to pick up our study from last time in Acts chapter 27, verses 1 through 26, and join Paul as a prisoner and those traveling with him on a ship headed for Rome. Paul, being a seasoned traveler, is giving advice to the commander about the potential dangers that lie ahead, and we'll see if his warnings are heeded in the conclusion of this study that's titled, Rome or Bust. Here's Pastor Jack.
This is not the way you want to learn the will of God. Number one, don't just follow expert advice, because sometimes experts are wrong and God's not. Second of all, never just look for comfort. I think the Lord's in it because it'll be comfortable for me. Also, I would say never follow the majority opinion. You'll probably be wrong, at least in terms of your spiritual life. And don't see calm seas as a sign that God's in it. So you got four things kind of working against you, right? Expert advice, majority opinion, it'll be more comfortable, and the seas are calm. Right? To be sure, that's a formula that will keep you far from the will of God. It does appear from our narrative that no one was praying except Paul and his buddies. No one mentions the Lord, no one... I perceived is a word that would suggest that it isn't just Paul relying on his wisdom, but Paul relying on the Spirit of God. It made every bit of sense on paper to go. It would look doable, but it would prove to be anything but. It was a good thing, I think, that Paul's on board, because as the days are going to grow longer, having someone that is in touch with God, I think, kept them all from ending up on the bottom of the ocean. I mean, God blessed them because of Paul's presence with them. If the world could see that, they would be more acknowledging of you and I as Christians. Even from a political standpoint, from building in the city, you know, churches aren't seen as valuable. We don't bring a lot of income. We don't pay taxes. We're nonprofit. There's no benefit to you and I being here. Or is there? But you see, it's not a financial benefit, and that sometimes can be the difficulty. So no one seemed to care for Paul's spiritual relationship with God. That didn't matter to them, though he shared it. Everyone said, well, look, the majority opinion, the experts say, you know, it's going to be some, we're going to have movies and restaurants, and look how nice the wind is blowing. They push out, they get away from the shore. Verse 14. But not long after, that doesn't sound good, a tempestuous headwind began to arise. It's a nor'easter, right? So when the ship was caught and could not head into the wind, we just had to let her drive. And running under the shelter of an island called Clauda, and that, again, is on your map. There's a little tiny island. We secured the skiff with great difficulty, and when we had taken it on board, we used cables to undergird the ship, and fearing lest we should run aground on the Styrus sands, you can see those, the sandbanks off of northern Africa there in Libya, they struck sail and so were driven, and they just kind of had to let the thing run. No sooner have they got out from the nice warm southerly breeze, then a typhoon kicks in, a hurricane conditions. And instead of sailing down the coast of Crete, they are pushed west and soon south into the open seas. And there's nothing to stop them. There's no way, you and a will and a sail can fight these kind of winds. 23 miles off the coast. I know it looks like it's just a hop, skip, and a jump, but Kalata there was about as far as Catalina is from from Huntington Beach. I mean, you can see it, 26 miles. This is 30 miles off the coast. According to verse 16, it was their only hope. It was the last place that they could hide themselves from the wind, and so much so that when they, got out from underneath it, it was all hell breaking loose. They had a great difficulty just getting their skiff, lifeboat on board. They ran ropes underneath this wooden ship with cables to give it more integrity, kind of strap it together, cinching their hopes on that. They feared that the wind would drive them into North Africa graveyards, where everyone that got there just sank. They had no way to control it. It was terrible weather. They couldn't see. And so they finally just had to take their sails down and wait. Imagine that. Totally out of control, thinking they were headed south to their graves. If you cheat and read ahead, you will look at, even at the map, that where they end up is really where they were going. Oh, they may not have gone quite so southerly, but through the Aegean, they could have passed and pretty much had to go south anyway to get through, the boot there. So God was bringing them to where he wanted them to be, but they certainly didn't know it. And for the next 2 weeks, imagine you on a ship, wind howling, can't see your hand in front of you, no place to control it. You're just beat around in the middle of the ocean for 2 weeks. I would have jumped off board the third day. Oh my goodness. It was hopeless. And yet behind it all, God is moving them to their destination. They had no idea where they were. Stormy, overcast, horrible. We are told in verse 18 that because we were exceedingly tempest-tossed, the next day we lightened the ship. Day two, we threw over all of the non-essentials to lighten the ship. On the third day, verse 19, we threw over the ship's tackle with our own hands. Verse 2, second day, non-essentials. Third day, some essentials. The extra sail, the cables, the furniture, the baggage. We need it, but if we die, we won't need any of it. We then read as we continue, and when we neither saw sun nor stars for many days, and there was no small tempest that was beating on us, all hope that we would be saved was finally given up. From day 4 to day 14, despair set in. Hey, experienced captain, what do you think of your choice now? Hey, boat owner, bragging of your experience, great move. They had done all that they could. The ship was lightened. The ship was fortified. It was out of their hands, and they despaired. They had no place to turn and nowhere to look. It must have been a horrible storm to have people that are this experienced conclude that they're all going to die. Notice at the end of verse 20, the hope that any of us would be saved was finally given up. We're not going to make it through this. Terrible days of the wind howling and the boat creaking. And I don't know if, you keep prisoners down below. It makes me ill to think about it. I want to do this, just to get you, how you doing, It doesn't take long. By the way, it has nothing to do with our study, but I remember taking a speech class in college, debate class or public speaking, and this was my tendency. And I say, Jack, stand still. I am not. But then I start talking, get nervous, so I do this. Honestly, I got like a C or a D. But because kids aren't nice to each other, when I started doing this, pretty soon all the kids were doing like that. That's another story, but if it comes into your mind, you might as well share. We were on a flight, how many years ago in Paris? 15 years ago? Longer? You don't remember. Huh? When was it, Gerard? Huh? Over 20 years ago. So we were taking a small group to Israel. Maybe there was only 20 people with us on it. And we flew to Paris. And we were supposed to spend the night there and then fly to Israel. So we got on a plane in Paris, went up to altitude, and one of our two engines blew out. And there was oil, and you could, you know, it blew out. We had 300 people on a plane with two engines, and one of them went out. So they announced in French what had happened, and our stewardess right in front of us fainted. And I said to my wife, "This can't be good." And we had some people with us that flew a lot and kind of looked at them. Well, then they announced in English, we lost an engine. We're going to have to fly down to 10,000 feet to maintain, you know, integrity in the air. And we were over the Pyrenees, and it was not good. So then we landed in Greece or in Austria first? Anyway, I think we landed in Austria, in Vienna. So they put us all inside, and they worked on the plane, sent somebody from Paris. 19 hours they work on the plane. They tell us, get on the plane, everything's good, isn't it? Great. Take off. 30 minutes later, same engine blows out again. And people are like freaked. Then we ended up in Athens, I think. We landed in Greece. And then there was a whole lot of political problems with, you know, people going to funerals in Israel. And they bury their people in the same day, and they had to be there. And they can't take off again. Anyway, everything was fine, but you know, when the stewardess started to go, I thought, that's not good. You should be the last one. And then you can't understand French, you know, and then they tell you in English, and this girl is, well, I'm thinking if, I don't know, long time ago. Anyway, you get on a boat with guys that own ships that are sailing thousands of miles with grain, they make their living at it, and they go, yeah, it'll be great. And now they're going, we're going to die. I think you give up home pretty quickly as well. We're going to die. And that's exactly what happens. Everyone gave up hope, all except for Paul and some guys with him who are down below praying and hanging on for dear life. He was sure he was going to get to Rome. Why? Because the Lord had said, you're going to get to Rome. But he had no idea what God might had planned for Timothy or Aristarchus, his old friend, or the captain, or Julius. And so Paul is downstairs praying for the people that are with him. Like I said, so good to have Paul on board. Paul might have come and said, you know, I did mention this, but that's not the way it works. And so Paul finds himself in a storm, in a horrible storm that was none of his choosing. He told everyone, let's not go, and they went. Maybe you've been in a position where you just knew the Lord wanted something else, but you weren't in a position to make this decision. Maybe your boss or your family or somebody forces your hand, and now you're suffering because they're stupid. They didn't listen. What do? Yell at them, scream, blame someone else? Not Paul. He just went, Lord, save these folks that have made such a bad choice. He started praying for those who had made the worst call of all. I remember hearing a story of a guy that was falling from a 10-story ledge. And he grabbed onto an 8th floor flagpole and said, Lord, help me. And the Lord said to him, let go. And he said, no, Lord, please help me. And the Lord said, let go. And he said, is there anyone else up there? I think we usually want the favorable winds and the calm seas and all, but look, don't be, you know, so upset about the strange trials that are to try you as if some strange things has happened to you. So I don't know what your reaction would be. Put yourself in Paul's shoes for a minute. You know, would your reaction be, this is awful and no other Christian has ever faced this and the storm's going to be at my death and how come you're doing this to me, Lord? And look, Paul just knew he was getting to Rome, but he wanted everyone to go with him. All things work together for good to those who love the Lord. And the last few years had proven all that. So he didn't know what to do, but he knew he needed to pray. In fact, if you look at the end of this story, it's pretty powerful that God had them going in the direction he wanted all along. How bad was the storm? If you don't see a sun or a moon or stars, if no one eats for 2 weeks, if the captain of the ship says we're all going to die, it couldn't get any worse. That's worse than a stewardess passing out right in front of you. Paul was resting in the Lord while the world and the ship, notice verse 20, they gave up, right? They gave up. Verse 21, but after a long abstinence from food, and I suspect it's because that's not a good way to eat, Paul stood up in the midst of them and said, men, You should have listened to me and not have sailed from Crete to have encouraged this disaster and this loss. But now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, only that of the ship. For there stood by me this night an angel of the Lord, to whom I serve and to whom I belong and to whom I serve. And he said, do not be afraid, Paul. You must be brought before Caesar, and indeed God has granted you all those who are sailing with you. Everyone was seasick practically. Spiritually, they were also not doing well. But Paul, down in that hole in the ship, the worst place you could have been held, was praying. I don't know if you were in the hole of that ship, if hearing that you were going to survive was good news or bad news. I think, you know, oh, please, I just want to die. Paul said to them, I told you so, but I want you to notice something. He didn't say, I told you so, until he was able to say in verse 22 and in verse 25, just take heart. He wasn't just willing to go out of his way to say, I'm right and you're wrong. He was willing to say, you should have listened to the Lord, and here's what he's promised to do. In other words, his complaint only was delivered once he had not just criticism, but a blessing and a hope and a direction to give with it. And I think that's helpful, because just, you know, what would the other have accomplished? I love the picture in my narrative here, ours, that Paul the prisoner is now the captain of the ship, right? He's calling the shots. He's telling them what's going to happen. He'll tell people when they're trying to sneak off, hey, let them sneak off. We all die. Bets are off. God's going to quit. I mean, everything he says from now on, people are listening to. They're letting Paul be kind of the guy in charge. No longer the captain, no longer the owner, no longer the centurion, man of God. Pretty cool. Cheer up, man. God has shown me that we're going to lose the ship, we're going to lose the cargo, but we're not going to lose any of you. The Lord has plans for me. I've been praying for you, and he's given all of you to me. You're going with me. Isn't that great? One Christian in the right place saves everyone. And I thought there are so many examples in the Bible of those whom God uses, puts them in lives of people, and they acknowledge that because of the existence of that person, his proximity to their lives changed. I thought about in chapter 18 of Genesis, when Abraham hears from the Lord about how he's going to go destroy the city, he says to the Lord, how about if in the city of you find 10 righteous folks, then would you destroy Sodom for 10 righteous? And the Lord said, if there are 10 righteous people in the city, I won't destroy the city. Now, because we read through, we say this, there weren't very many righteous. The place got wiped out. But don't lose the other lesson, and that is God, for the sake of a few, spares the many. For your sake, blesses the places that you find yourself. When Laban found out that Jacob was leaving him there in Genesis chapter 30, he said, please stay if I found grace in your sight, for I have learned that the Lord blesses me for your sake. He realized that a child of God brought blessing to a guy that was, you know, as crooked as Jacob was really. When Potiphar took Joseph into his house in chapter 39, I guess, of Genesis, and he made him overseer of his entire house, we read that Joseph brought blessing upon the Egyptian's house and all that he has for Joseph's sake. Joseph shows up, and he's the reason there's blessing. So here's my question. Do you bring blessing to your job, to your family, to your friends, your neighborhood, just because you're saved? And you're willing to be saved, you know, and express that to others. Are you the blessing? People may not like you initially because there's a lot of warfare that comes with your witness. But ultimately, people begin to realize that there's blessing. And I'm hoping that the city sees you that way, and I. That there's blessing to be had from having compassion on the poor and helping the needy and feeding the hungry and visiting the sick. And being citizens of a city that obey the laws and bless those that persecute you and pray for those that are placed over you, there's a great benefit to you being there. And that was certainly the case with Paul. I love verse where he says in verse 22, I just urge you to take heart, or literally, don't give up now. Verse 20, we give up. No, take heart. He says in verse 20. 5. Therefore, because the Lord has told me this, take heart, men, for I believe that God will do just as he has told me. I believe God. Take heart in the midst of a hurricane at sea with just a bunch of almost 300 people and a sail. Take heart sounds kind of ridiculous unless God stands behind it. So Paul says to these guys, cheer up, be encouraged. I believe God's going to do what he said. I don't know if you believe it or not, but I do. And Paul brought great counsel and great comfort. It does often boil down to that anyway, doesn't it? Do we believe God or not? The Lord said to Adam and Eve, you eat of this tree, you will surely die. And Satan comes along and goes, well, one thing for sure, you're not going to die if you eat of this tree. Who are you going to believe? One word of difference, and it hinged, and on it hinged the health and the happiness and the holiness of man. What would Adam and Eve do? Who would they believe? The door of salvation swings that way as well. You know, the world says just work your way to heaven, do your best you can, bring your resume, God will be impressed. The Bible says you need Jesus, believe in him, you'll have life. Right? Only one name given. Who are you going to believe? All boys, and Paul said to these guys, I know you think we're going to drown. I'm telling you, God told me this. I believe God. So cheer up. If you don't have faith, run with mine. Do you want to believe in Darwin or do you want to believe in Moses? Do you really want to believe man evolves upward or that man is a fallen being that needs to be redeemed? Do we really want to believe that we all, evolved from a common ancestor, or do we want to believe that 10 times in the book of Genesis, God says that everything develops after its kind? Who are you going to believe? Who are you going to believe? Paul yells over the howling winds as the deck heaves, and so do the passengers. I believe God. The rest of you will get that later. It's okay. I thought it was funny. The whole ship now, in hopefulness, is dependent upon the faith of Paul, and he invites them to stand with him, trusting God. In a few days, they would hit an island. I suspect quite a few of them might have gotten saved on this trip, although we are not told. But in the storm, the question becomes, who will you believe? Who will you believe? I love the story. I'm so glad I wasn't there. I just get nauseous reading it. I remember going to my first job I worked for years as an optician, and then I worked for a lens company, and we all went fishing. It was going to be a great team bonding thing. And, these were guys that weren't Christians. They were drinking a lot and eating. And I was just, oh, you got to be kidding. And I took that Dramamine, and that didn't help at all. And then I fell into the bait tank and then when you're with your peers, that's the worst thing in the world. I hate it. I still hate it. I love the water and hate the boat. I don't have any idea how that's supposed to work out. But I love the story. Look how God works. In the storm, who are you going to believe?
As always, the best thing is to look to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. We've been listening to a study taken from Acts chapter 27, verses 1 through 26. This has been the second half and conclusion of a two-part study taught by Pastor Jack Abelin. If you'd like to get the entire message, we do have that available for you. All you need to do to order, simply contact us and ask for study number 3088. It's always helpful for us to know the radio station that you're listening to, so be sure to mention those call letters when you get a hold of us. And this month, we'd like to offer you one of Pastor Jack's most popular books. It's the Jesus Chronicles. Well, in this book, the Messiah's sermons, healings, confrontations with the religious authorities, interaction with his disciples and the common people, all unfold chronologically. It's a great book to have or to give as a gift so that you can have a better grasp on the life of Jesus from beginning to end. Now, the Lord has truly used this resource for thousands of people as they've come to know and understand the life of Jesus more vividly as Pastor Jack goes through the Gospels chronologically. You can order this book by Pastor Jack that's titled The Jesus Chronicles, or to get today's study, just dial our toll-free phone number at 866-88-GRACE. That's 866-884-7223. Or you can also order by mail. Just address your letter to Growing Through Grace, P.O. Box 1954, Whittier, California, 90609. But you can also get this resource as well as today's study online at growingthroughgrace.com. Again, that's growingthroughgrace.com. And if you're going to be in the Southern California area this Easter season, Pastor Jack would love to have you come join us and the folks at Morningstar Christian Chapel for our Easter celebration on March 31st at 8 o'clock a.m. over at Titan Stadium at Cal State Fullerton. We'll be blessed by the Morningstar Children's Choir and Praise Team. Pastor Jack will bring us a special Easter message. So plan to join us for our Easter celebration, March 31st, 8 a.m. Titan Stadium at Cal State Fullerton is located on Yorba Linda Boulevard at the 57 Freeway. And that's going to wrap it up not only for today, but for this week. We do look forward to being with you again in our next program. So until then, as you daily walk with our Lord Jesus Christ, may you continue to grow in His grace. Growing Through Grace is a listener-supported ministry brought to you by Morningstar Christian Chapel in Whittier, California, a Calvary Chapel outreach.